Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Another week. This is We Talk Production presenting Black Herb America, which come on Tuesday evenings, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, we have on Saturday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m. We have Carlton Steve with Provocative Thoughts, and he really addresses controversial issues. Starting soon, in another couple of weeks, we have Ms. April Jones, who will be dealing with parenting and how to deal with infants and children on her show, and she will be starting in a few weeks. Also, our website's under construction. We need an ITT person, taking a little while, but that is coming along, and then you could it could be open to a various population around the world. Last week, I must apologize. I was having a great conversation with Mr. Kenneth Joyner and Mr. Raymond Nelson III. They run a after-school program called Boys with a Purpose. And these guys are doing a great job. Which and also show come to find out there was this guy in the vicinity fixing the cable wires or whatnot and the internet and the whole area went out. It just wasn't me, because you know I could mess up on these electronics, but that's okay. Where I'm weak in some areas, I'm very strong in other areas. But again, a call-in number, 909-265-9215, or go to blogtalkradio.com/BlackHerbAmerica. Now, I just want to say this before I get to the guest. Today was breaking news. there was a shoot, not shoot, it was a mass shooting. Five individuals died at U2 headquarters, I think in California, in San Francisco, California. I'm not too sure. And guess who the shooter was? A woman. A woman. The reporter said there have been 17 mass shootings in the past. There have been 17 mass shootings, all by men. What does that say for the male population of this country? It should say by all Caucasian men. But it was a young woman. There's no other information. But and with the Parkland shooting a month or 6 weeks ago, now this, we have all this violence. And I'm going to ask my guests, you know, in a few minutes, you know, how these young men feel about all this violence. And there were some schools in urban areas, which were predominantly by African-American students. They really want to participate because they said that they see violence every day. There's guns going off every day, and not a word is said in the media. Not a word. This young kid, 15, young lady, 15 years old from Philadelphia, said that, you know, I'm not going to participate because when kids were being shot on a daily basis in certain communities around this country, no one cared. No one cared. So, you know, it's probably going to get worse before it gets better, because I'm telling you, I'm going to say 60% of Americans own guns legally. I'm just putting it out there. It could be more or it could be less. I'm just putting a number out there. It's going to be some resistance. I do commend the millennials are standing on firm ground, protesting something, an issue that is dear to them. And they have my support. I still say, you know, where was the outcry when our little babies were getting shot? And on the line, we have Mr. Kenneth Joyner. Good evening, Kenneth. How you doing?
Good evening, brother. Thank you so much for having me again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I appreciate you and your partner for coming on, you know. And again, I apologize for last week. Like I said, you know, I thought it was me because I'm always pushing buttons. I don't have no business pushing, you know. So how was your week, Kenneth? You're on spring break this week, right?
Yeah, we're on spring break this week, so get a chance to rest. You know, downtime with the family, that's always important. And just a time to reflect, you know. And so, so far, it's going really well. And I'm just excited, you know, about the opportunity again to speak tonight to your audience and just some upcoming events that we're having as well. But just overall, man, just excited about, you know, the move and how things are going.
Yeah, well, tell us about the upcoming events that's going on.
We have an event on April 22nd here in Charleston. We did it last year. It's called Calling All Fathers, where we will bring out all the fathers of our young men who are in the organization. If possible, some have fathers, some don't. So what we do is we solicit the community, and we bring out community leaders to be able to come and stand with that young man as he receives an award. All of our boys will be getting an award. Just for their outstanding growth and participation in our after-school program and just overall in Boys with a Purpose. And just having seen the growth in them this year, we like to do that event for fathers, because a lot of times we felt like, you know, fathers aren't getting the credit, you know, that they deserve, especially those fathers who are.
Deserve the credit? Hold on, Kenny. I will be to cut you off. But this issue right here, I've been working on this issue for decades. You know, trying to get these young men to be involved with their children and what have you. Do we really deserve the credit? I mean, it is supposed to be our responsibility to provide for our children, whether we with the woman or not. And from our eyes view, and I'm not even talking about numbers and stats, from our eyes view, it appears that there are more and more single mothers out there that don't have, it's on one hand single mother, but you have the father petition. But it's whole different when you're a single mother and you don't have the father petition. Do we really deserve credit?
Oh, yeah, we do. Because what's happening, brother, is just that. What's being talked about, especially in our community, is the negative. And so we accentuate the negative, but we never talk about the positive. I personally know brothers who are effective fathers in their children's lives. On a daily basis, Mr. Nelson, my partner, who obviously co-founded the program, is a single father, consistent in his daughter's lives, raising her by himself. But what happens is we hear so much about the negative of what African-American and just men, period. I'm just going to put that out there, what they're not doing as fathers. We believe that stereotype over the fact that there are some brothers out there that are involved in their sons and their daughters' lives, that are actually doing the things that they need to do to be good husbands, good fathers. But we don't talk about that. And we felt like instead of always saying what we're not doing, because we obviously see that. We know that there are, you know, men who are not involved in their children's lives. I was raised by a single mother, four kids. She did it. My mother did it. And we see women doing it. However, we don't talk about the fathers who are actually involved in their children's lives and give them credit, because they do deserve credit, because they are the ones that are going up against the stereotype to say, hey, I am a father, I am a man, and I'm involved in my child's lives. I don't have to fall into or even be labeled with that stereotype that all men are deadbeat dads, or the majority of African-American men are not involved in their children's lives. And so we felt like this piece here, calling on fathers, brings the fathers out, recognizes them, because I don't think men get enough credit, again, as I said before, for what they do in their communities and what they are doing on a daily basis. I've been married 22 years, and I have a daughter, 21 years old. But if you see me, and people who don't know me, they might think, well, he got a kid, but is he with the mother? You see what I'm saying? But obviously, yeah. People in my circle know that. You know, people in my circle know that. But I think we have to put out positive images about ourselves so that other people, because the majority of people who have a stereotype of African American people get that stereotype from African American who put up certain things on social media, or put out certain things that, you know, we act a certain way or we talk a certain way. They get the stereotypes from us. So we can't begin to tear down those stereotypes unless we, again, first and foremost say, hey, listen, everybody's not like that. Everybody's not doing those things. There are some educated African-Americans that are, like yourself, who are doing positive things for the community. But if we don't start to put those kinds of things out there, then even as a community, we will believe the hype that, man, we're not intelligent. We can't lead. All or 50 or 60% of African-American males are not involved in their children's life, which those statistics are presented by who? Not people who look like us.
No, not me.
So that's what I'm saying. So we just felt like with this, we wanted to empower these fathers, these you know, grandfather, whoever it is, whoever your positive male role model is in your life, we saying, hey, come on out, celebrate with us, celebrate with that young man. And then if you're not even in our program, come on out, bring a young man, because he might learn something. He might hear something that's going to begin to give him value and to begin to let him know, you know what, I'm not just here to play games. I'm here for a purpose. My life has a purpose. And I should be focused in on that. So that's kind of like what we're going to be doing.
Let me ask you a question to stay on
sure.
Why are we? Like, for example, I was watching the news this morning. I watch the news every day. Sometimes I watch the news the whole day. Why are we being portrayed in traditional media in a negative way, or are we being portrayed as the boogeyman? We either robbing, or we shooting someone, or we get busted for dealing. I mean, it's blown up on all the local news stations across America. You know, like, for example, when Ray Rice hit his fiance, they're married now, all of a sudden,
right.
The black man became the face of domestic violence. I don't know how that happened, you know. And there were white guys in the NFL didn't even say anything about. And they had the domestic violence cases. Why are we always being portrayed as the boogeyman in media?
Well, one of the reasons I think, again, that we have to take, we've got to take responsibility, you know, for our actions. That's the first point in that. What I mean by that is the images that we portray about ourselves. Again, I'm a firm believer in that. So if I choose to play a certain role in a movie or a certain role on a show, then I'm choosing to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to portray it, although it's real or not, right? But if I put it out there that I'm going to play this position and play this role, then people believe 90% of what they see. And so if I
right.
play a drug dealer and I happen to be African-American and I happen to be a womanizer or I happen to be right, then that's what they're going to believe. See, with the situation with Ray Rice is everything black has been negative. This ain't the first time they've been doing it. Like, they've been using everything we do to portray negativity back in the biblical day. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's been going on for a minute. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that, you know, black is, I mean, if you look up the definition of it, you know what I'm saying? It just means something negative. So they've been using black to denote negativity for years. It's our job to, again, show what we're made of. It's our job to show that we're not all negative. We're not all violent. We're not all out here with our pants sagging and cursing and womanizing and selling drugs. So every day we step out as black men, especially myself, right, I got a daughter. I know every day I step out on the street, I represent not only myself, but I represent her. I represent my wife. I represent my mother. I represent my father, right? So I know that I have to portray myself in a certain way. I know that. So I can't do certain things or say certain things that are going to go against negative or show me in a negative light, or African Americans, period. So whether we want to, but again, it's the piece of, you know, everybody chasing something. You know what I'm saying? So if you're chasing, you know, you're trying to get an Academy Award and you want to act in a certain way or you want to portray certain things, you have that right. But everybody is sending a message. They're sending a message about us as African Americans, and they're sending a message out into this world. And so our kids who are coming through, this is the visual generation. That's why selfie game is so prevalent and everything you post on social media. They believe what they see. So when we portray certain things about ourselves, we got to know it's affecting our youth. It's affecting the next two and three generations. So we're being portrayed in negative light every single time you turn on the TV because, again, that's what they believe about us. When they see it, they say, aha, look at here. They're doing it again. Let's put it up. Let's put it up. Let's put it up. And so we've got to just make a decision, you know, that, hey, I'm not going to portray myself in a certain way. Everybody's talking about keeping it real, and that's one thing we do, but keeping it real for you is going to affect two and three generations. Dr. King kept it real. And
that's right.
Keeping it real with the truth now affects us 50 years from now. You see what I'm saying? And so those are the kind of things you got to
Is Ray Mayer code 314?
Say that again.
Is his area code 314?
314. No, that's not him. He's probably going to be
have,
an 8-4. He's going to be an 8-4-3.
Okay. Someone want to ask you a question.
Sure, come on. Bring
good,
up, bring
evening. Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to Black Urban America. You on the
How
air.
How you doing, Black Urban America?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I want to make a couple comments.
Go right ahead, sir.
Now.
And where you
we
from?
We have to admit, I'm calling from the Midwest.
Okay.
Now, would you agree that there's a difference between, and I hear the word we use very loosely. Do you believe that there's a difference between what we call, what's called identified, or those who identify here in the United States as black and objected black African-Americans from black Africans? Those are three distinct different people. Would you agree to that?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Thank you.
Now, how so?
Because you...
How are we different? What's the difference between a black American and an African American?
Because of the thinking, the habits, the way they live, their lifestyle. I mean, look at me, for instance. I consider myself an objective black African American. And there's things that I see going on, and which is okay if the people do that, but I myself wouldn't care to do it. For instance, I supported and voted for Donald Trump, and I'm an NRA lifetime member. So, and there's a lot of blacks that's in both of those categories, but if they are outwardly about it, whether on their job or in their social circles, they get ridiculed. That's because they have a different mindset. They have reached a certain paradigm in the United States, and they think different. I hear some black groups saying that, well, capitalism is terrible, and we need to have our own, and they're hoping for the downfall of America in some capacity or another. But that's not the opinion nor the desires of all that has been labeled as being black. I mean, that's just a total fact. All blacks are not the same. All blacks were not slaves in the United States, in this country. But we kind of put the narrative as if all are the same. Now,
well, let me ask you something,
together.
Sir. Let me ask you something, sir. What you're saying, because we're talking about how can we develop our young men, our young boys. So, what concept can that be employed in developing young men, young boys, African-American boys?
That's a good question. One thing you got to have is a family. I mean, one of the tried, true, and proven ways of having a family and, wreaking some sort of success in the United States is go to school and get education, get a job, and get married. That's one way. And I'm sure that, you know, people talk about back in the day, well, if you look back in the day, that was a typical thing that went on. Another thing, you have to be more selective in the education of your child. That's why I come up for school choice with vouchers, where parents can choose to put their child in the environment that best suits their overall education outcomes for their children, and not be dictated by a central environment or even particular these teachers' unions. So that's two ways.
Can I ask you something
yes,
on that education piece, because I'm a teacher. So you said you for free choice.
School choice. For
choice,
yes,
right?
With parents.
For,
yes, sir.
Free choice, basically. For school choice, do you believe that every child in this country and every person in this country has the right to an effective and an equal education?
Well, when you say effective, let's say that you're talking about the operation of the schools. How
no,
those
I'm
schools
just saying
operate?
Effective and equal, meaning that the same things that you would get in a high suburban, $500,000 area, should be the same things you get in Compton, USA.
That's well, you know, on the short answer, you know, you have some black school districts that actually have more per child than white school districts because
of
the formula.
Yes,
that is a yes.
Okay.
But
so
here's the point.
Let me
answer your question.
Well, I'm just trying to figure it out now. You said something. So
well,
you
haven't let
sure
me answer
sure.
the. You haven't let me answer the question. Every time I get going, you interrupt me.
Go ahead.
Now, here's the thing: how effective that school district is up to the parents and the stakeholders. The parents and the stakeholders, the school district, are employees of the overall population, who are the employers. So, if parents feel a need to have changes and have things implemented in their school district, then they should work to have it done. And when you have ineffectiveness in that school district, then you should make heads roll. You already see that in some school districts, if I can make mention. But if you just send your child to school and take whatever comes out of it, when they bring home a report card and you don't do a self-evaluation of your child to see exactly where they stand along the educational line, then you just going along with the flow. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that portion of it. I definitely would agree with that, but I also understand that it comes down to resources. It comes down to because I work in a school district and I see it. I've been in a school district for quite some time, so I see that the allocation of teachers, the allocation of money for certain schools, which are same schools or in the same school district, are not being equally divided, and particularly in the African-American community or the community of minority. And that's across the board in every city and every state. So I'm just trying to figure out.
Well, let me question you on that.
And I guess Trump is he has his view or you voted for him. If that is not the case, then how then are we going to equal the playing field for kids who aren't getting those kinds of resources and those kinds of opportunities? Because regardless of if there weren't, if everybody wasn't a slave in this country, and that some people, all black people weren't slaves, that's definitely true. But the system of slavery set up where we are today, where there aren't equal opportunities for minorities across the board. So I'm just saying, how do we evenly and balance those scales if we have free choice and some of those schools are getting more money than those schools in minority neighborhoods?
Well, I don't know what school district you're in, but I'm sure your school district has what's called the ADA, which is the average daily attendance, by which they base how much money that school building gets per child that's sitting in a chair at a certain time of day. In the St. Louis area, it's 11:30. At least it was, it still may be. As I said before, you have some school districts in this area where the average daily attendance amount of money per child is greater than what it is in white school districts.
But
in Beaumont,
are they getting the resources, though? The money
what do you
might
mean?
Be,
the, resources, the resources is the money, and then the board is instructed, or should be instructed by the parents. But the board buys, a board obtains what they have, what they attain.
So then, why do we have schools in same school districts who don't have resources? You can go through Chicago, you can go through L.A., you can go through New York. You see it when they talk about this on a daily basis. Schools not having the same resources, or schools that are in the same district, not getting what they need to be able to compete, so that our kids, the minority kids, are able to compete on a level where everybody else. I mean, that's
it comes.
That's why
it's still,
education is under the gun.
It still goes back to the board. If you're getting $22,000, $15,000 per child, that should be enough to educate that child. That's
not
per
really.
Child.
Not really. $22,000.
Well, let me tell you this. In Kansas City, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
under the DSEG program, Judge Russell Clark asked the activists in Kansas City, Missouri, I know that area very well, how much money does it take for you to get the results that you're looking for? And this
mm-hmm.
is a school district that only had 33,000 students in it. The activists said, we need $1 billion. Judge Russell Clark said, I give you $2 billion. 33,000 students at $2 billion is $60-some-odd thousand, $67,000 per year. That's Harvard money. That is Harvard
money. What's your point?
Well, you said it's not really. I'm saying it is. Money is not always the case.
That's what I said. I said not really. Me. And what I'm saying is that you need more that – this is why I said not really. You need more than monetary. You need different items in the schools. You need like Kenny here. You need to fund programs like Boys with a Purpose. You need to fund support staff, support programs, computers. Well, they'll have computers no more. Laptops and books. There was a white child. A white child in Oklahoma had a book that was from 30 years ago.
Whose fault is that?
Because Oklahoma is having a very serious problem. But you need more than money. And you need effective guidance. You need effective instructors that provide efficient care and teaching to the children. And also, the main thing, and this was the big issue since I was a kid, that was decades ago, the size of the classroom. Also, how black boys is being funneled to special education where they don't even have any disorders. It's just the whole stereotypical process when it comes to African American schools or schools in African American communities.
I'm glad you mentioned it because let me say this. Still looking at the parents in the school district. That's not the White House. White House don't have any jurisdiction over what's taught in those schools.
I hear
people say that. But we got a school district here in the Normie School District. They have brand new buildings. I built one of the buildings. They have labs. They have computers. They have all those things. And yet the school district has been provisional for at least since the 90s. So that's still the parents. And parents don't show up. Let me talk about, and people always, when I say school choice, people mention charter schools. When parents decide to take their child out of the traditional school setting, public school setting, and go to, say, a charter school, only a third of the money follows that child, around $6,500. So how do these other schools, some of them, do such a good job when they only have a third of the money? And there's a lot of them. You know, there's schools, there's STEAM schools, like, for instance, in St. Louis, they have a construction training school. In Florida, they got an aerospace charter school. You got a maritime academy charter school in Philadelphia. Heck, in New York, they got a charter school for applied tech basketball in New York. But that's what the parents
supposed to have. For police and firemen. Can you wrap it up? I got to get back to the interview with Kenny because this is his time now, you know.
I just had to say what I say is that people are not the same. I hear these discussions saying the we, but they're not defining who the we is. We would be more likely, in the nearest case, would be your own family. But it also can be a group of people.
I just want to say this. I have Republicans, black Republicans on my show. I have black conservatives. I had people from all walks of faith from our culture. And let me tell you, we have one thing we have in common. We have this skin color, and then we have this resistance from the dominant society that only let a few in, and we all suffer from the same traumatic syndrome. I disagree with this. Let me finish. I don't care if you're conservative, liberal. I don't care if you're Muslim, Christian. I really don't care. We all have to face these issues head on together as a culture. Thank you for calling.
And real quick, if you don't mind, sir.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go to the National Society of Black Engineers website. They have over 8,000 jobs, some that was posted as recently as last week, where they're seeking out African-American
black.
Well, let me finish, because there's people that's listening probably don't know about it. Where they're seeking out black kids, black students, black graduates who have STEM degrees. And the opportunities exist. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling.
Well, he did bring up something that I was going to lead into, Kenny. And that's what my show is all about, dialogue.
That's what I mean.
The name of the production company is We Talk Productions. And I get people from all different – I really focus. You got to be very clear what I'm saying. I really focus on black folks, okay? That's what I know. That's who I am. I mean, what other people do for their culture, they don't get criticized. But we do. But that's okay. I don't care. I've been criticized all my life. But just to continue, he brought up something at which I was going to ask. I was looking into some scores, reading math scores today, right?
Right.
We're not doing too good, huh?
No, well, as a nation, no, we're not doing too good.
No, I'm talking about South Carolina. I'm talking about South Carolina.
No, not at all. And one of the things I think is a combination. You know, I think we've got to change from the top down. The South for me is a different. It's different. I just want to say that. I'm from D.C. originally, and so when I came here in 2007, it was different. It was much different, and I had to deal with a lot of things that obviously I didn't have to deal with when I was up north. Not to say that it wasn't there, but it was here more so like in your face, you know. And so, as a state, when it comes to math and science, or when it comes to just overall education, no, South Carolina is not doing well. And I think the only way we can change that, let me say that they've tried to, and they've done some, taken some steps towards that. They're trying to get more effective teachers in the classroom is one, but also just making sure that, because back in the day, we were coming through, Mama would definitely check the homework. She would definitely look at and see if you was doing what you was, you know, supposed to be doing in the school.
So the brother from Missouri had a point. You know, the parents got to be involved. You know, my mom checked my homework too. And like I said, you got to be effective teaching.
Yeah, you got to be. Because the system of education is such that you need not only the parent, but you need the community, and then you need the teacher. And so that's just how that will, you know, generate an effective education. So when parents show for parent conferences, when they come for meetings, when they ask questions, and they just don't allow, you know, certain things to take place, then, you know, in that aspect, you know, he's right, then you'll see a shift, you'll see a change. But the value of education, I think, has gone down across the board, not only in South Carolina, but I'm just saying period, because we tell kids, you know, we tell kids get a great education, but we pay teachers next to nothing. And they like, wait a minute, why would I want to, you know, why is this really important when I can see, well, I see other people being successful without, you know, all this education. So, but again, that's the myth, you know, because everybody not going to, you know, be able to drop out of Harvard and start Facebook. You know what I'm saying? It's just
right.
not going to happen. Like, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg. So so
you
got to
drop out of high school and get a record deal or a rap record or
right.
a hip-hop record.
So,
I would say hip-hop in my day. Hip-hop record, you know?
So kids got to know that, man. But they believe, you know, and that's one of the things I love about this generation. They believe so greatly and so strongly, but one of the things that has to be added to that is a consistent work ethic. You know what I'm saying? And so they want it. I mean, they want it. They want to go to the NBA, NFL. They want it. They believe that they can do it.
I did
but
too.
When it comes down, yeah. You know,
I did
and
too.
So, and I did too. But that work ethic, and then when you realize the numbers and that, okay, well, at least if I'm going, I need to have a backup plan. I need to have a great education because if my knee go out or whatever, I need to be able to sustain myself, man. So, and so that's what has to be taught, especially, you know, across the board. But yeah, when it comes to education, I think again we've got to tear down some stereotypes. We've got to make some gains when it comes to, like I said before, schools in the same school districts don't have the same opportunities. They don't have the same supplies. They don't have the same books. And they certainly don't have the same quality of teachers. And so I think here in South Carolina, what they tried to do is they tried to first tackle having an effective teacher in the classrooms. And once we get that, then we can begin to move and raise the level of, you know, each and every individual student, hiring more, obviously, but because the pay and everything else is so expensive, you know, people say, hey, do I want to be an engineer? Or do I want to be a teacher? I mean, so it's a no brainer. Do I want to go into science, technology, engineering?
Yeah,
math,
engineers make a lot of money. Make a lot of money. I just want to ask you this. I want to get into the boys now. We only got a few more minutes. I want to get into
That's
the
all
boys.
Right.
There's a couple questions I want to ask about the boys.
Sure.
How are they feeling? What are they expressing about the violence, A, in their community, and the violence in general in this country?
Wow, great question. With the violence in their community, it's really unfortunately.
Are they scared, or do they feel like nobody's protecting them, or they feel like they're by themselves? How are they feeling about the? How are they internally feeling in their hearts?
Well, in their hearts, they generally feel that they do have, because again, they're part of this program, and this is, they feel like, you know, they have someone that they can come to. Now, of course, their parents as well, and then, of course, us. And they feel a part of something, so they do feel protected. Now, if you're not in the program and you're just out here on these streets trying to make it, then you do fear. You do fear, so what do you want to do? You want to try to protect yourself, and that means either getting a gun illegally or legally. Most of the time, sometimes that's illegal, you know, but they fear. They fear you know, just the basics of traffic stops, or they fear, you know, how people are going to look at them if they go into the corner store. You know, we took a trip to the corner store just so they could see the difference when they walk in with their friends, and then the difference when they walk in on a Thursday when they dressed up and they walk
right.
in with me, see? So that's the difference. People treat you different when they see your outward appearance different. It's unfortunate, but that's the way we operate, you know. And so even when I go,
that's America.
When I go to a sushi store and I got my sweats on or whatever the case may be, you know, they might take a second look. But if I walk in with my suit on, you know, it's, "Hi, Mr. Jordan, how you doing? Good to see you again," you know. And so it's a different piece, you know. It's unfortunate, but again, you got to understand that, and you got to be able to navigate in this world like that, because this is the world we live in. And so they do genuinely feel a security with us, but overall they're fearful, you know. And that's just in their community. But when they see the violence on TV, of course, the recent shooting, and we learned that this young man was shot 22 times, 8 of which were in the back, you know, and they ask questions like that. Like, why did they shoot him, you know, in the back? Why was he, you know, was he threatening them if he's got his back to them or whatever the case may be? And so you got to answer some questions like that for a 10-year-old. You see what I'm saying? And so when you get that stain, you know, you get that kind of idea staying in your brain when you're 10, it's a difficult piece, man. Especially, like I said, if you don't have anybody to kind of guide you and walk you through it. And so we do a lot with that, talk with them about, you know, how to approach, again, adults, period. Because one of the things I think our young boys have to be trained in is how to respect authority. But many of them don't have or didn't have their father in their life. So it's different when mama says something to you opposed to when daddy says something to you. See? When a male checks you, it's you kind of buck up. Most young people, most young boys will buck up to that. And they'll look at you like, "Man, wait a minute. You don't tell me what to do." Why? Because my father wasn't there for me. I feel like I'm a man. You can't tell me what to do. So when authority, police officers or teachers or whoever, step to you, they like, "Man, they don't respect
how do the boys feel about law enforcement? How do your boys feel about law enforcement?"
They do. They some fear, and they ask the questions. We bring in law enforcement, so, you know, that we trying to make sure that they have a tangible, you know, person that they can put with it. Because remember what I said, these kids are visual. So they see certain things on the TV, but when a police officer actually comes in and speaks to them about how to conduct themselves, what to say, what to do.
Yeah, how to conduct themselves, not get shot. Are half your boys afraid that they might not make it to 21?
Well, I don't know if they have that fear. You know, because again, they're 10, you know, they 8, 10, you know, and they're younger, but they do fear that, you know, at any moment some things could happen to them as well. So, and they talk about, you know,
hey, Kenny, where I'm from, 10-year-olds get shot. I'm from Brooklyn.
Oh, no, I'm with you. Yeah, hey, no,
10-year-olds get shot. 10-year-olds are in the game. 10-year-olds,
oh, no,
drug dealers.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, and I'm from D.C. too, so I know that that's prevalent.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is our job is to get them to a place where, again, that we educate them on all levels. And that's what we're trying to do with our boys. We educate them on how to deal with the police. We educate them on how to conduct themselves as young men. We educate them on how to conduct themselves in the classroom when there are problems, how to make decisions. Most young people don't know how to make decisions. And so they just do whatever they feel, you know? And so that, you know, that often leads to, you know, other problems in life. And so those are the kinds of things that we're trying to do to make sure that our young boys know that, yes, this is the world you live in. This is how you got to operate in this world. Even myself, you know what I'm saying? You know, like when we go and I'm, you know, when I'm out, you know, if it's late, yeah, you know, I'm watching what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? I'm watching where I go. I'm watching, you know. And so because I
don't. Hey, I watch them watching me. I'm watching them watching me.
So, and I don't want to get pulled over no more than anybody. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's something that's in, you know, in the forefront. It used to be you know, kind of in the back, but now it's in the forefront of your mind every single day you step out. Make sure you got your ID, your wallet. Make sure.
Right, you know, right.
Yeah, all that.
Chase used to ask me, why we got to carry our ID all the time? If you don't, you go to jail. Number two, go create problems. Number three, you give them probable cause. What's that?
Absolutely.
And you got to break it down,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
we're a couple minutes left, Kenny. We're a couple minutes left. Try to sum up, and I'm sorry, to, you know, that guy, but that's what we do. I let callers ventilate. Sum up about the program and the reason why you're in it, you and Raymond are in it, you know.
Well, again, the program, Boys with a Purpose, you can go online and check that out, boyswithapurposesc.org, and kind of see what we do. But the program is set so that every young man knows his purpose in life. We believe that direction determines destination. And if you are headed in a certain direction, something positive, then you're going to get to that destination. You have a purpose. You're not here to play games or play around, you know, with your life, because this is all you got. And you came here for a reason. So what we do is we teach that life skills on a daily basis, training them and equipping them to be effective young men in their communities and in school, so that they know, you know, like they have value. Most young men join gangs or, you know, enter the drug game because they don't feel like they have any value. They feel like this is all I could do with the situation that I have, you know. And going back over it, they look back. I mean, even Jay-Z said, you know what, looking back over my life, there's some things that I regret, and selling drugs was one of them. So, but I didn't feel like I had anything else I could do, you know what I'm saying? So what did he do? He used the gift of rapping to kind of change his own mindset and to change the course of his life. His purpose now is to try to help other, you know, young brothers do the same. And so, you know, whatever situation that our young men find themselves in, they know that in Boys with a Purpose, they have value. They come there with value. You know, and when you have value and you count for something, then you know, like, man, you know, my life means something, and I should be doing something with it, not playing around with it, you know. And that goes for everything I do. Education-wise, if I want to play ball, then I'm going to give my all. If I want to draw, then I'm going to give my all. Whatever I want to do, I got to put my whole self in. And we're teaching that work ethic, man, that you know, our young people got to know that, you know, you come from a legacy of people that all they know is strength. All they know is survival. All they know is win. All they do is overcome, from slavery to Jim Crow to affirmative action, to every single time somebody tells us no as African-Americans, we win all the way to the presidency. So that is what we instill in them every single day.
Kenny, thank you. We made it without a mishap. Thank you for coming on the show. I told Raymond that I'm going to be calling him this weekend. I would like to call you too. I just want to throw something out there to you, not to be on the air, but to see, I have an idea where I can, we'll talk. Is that okay?
I got you. Yeah, I got you, man. I appreciate you too for having me on, man.
No problem. I appreciate you for coming on. And you have enjoy your spring break, okay?
No doubt. No doubt.
All right, brother. Peace.
All right, man. But...
That's a beautiful program, folks. And I hope that black men around the country that are listening and downloading this show, I want you to listen up, man. There's something we can do. And they started off small, too. Small. They started off small, and now it's a big program in South Carolina. And so, but I'm telling you, from me, my experience, you know, black men, the institutions in this country are anti-black male. or African American male. I say it every week. I am not going to say it until I see a change. And these young brothers in South Carolina are doing great with these boys. And I know they're not the only program, but they're the only program I know about it, except for the one in Harrisburg with Bruce Barnes doing his rites of passage program. So we got to, you know, instead of talking about our young, we have to be involved with our young. And starting off with your own kids. Well, I'm wrapping up next week. I see you next week. As I always say, because we are. We are because I am.
Hold it now.